All right, friends, welcome back to Second Chance Cinema. I am MC.
Hello, I am Spro.
And today we have a special treat for you because we're going to review a movie that I believe gets so much hate that is unnecessary. And
well, that's why we're here.
I know. That's basically the mission of the show, is because we want to give love to those movies that deserve a second chance, hence the name of the title.
And this is one of those special podcasts when we sat down at Applebee's, shout out to Applebee's, where we were trying to come up with a list of movies that we thought would be great for our podcast, and MC put out this one, and I was like, yeah, every once in a while we should have a host show where one host, you know, pitches the other one to the other host, because I have a slew of movies that I think MC would probably either hasn't seen or doesn't like as much as me. And Street Fighter,
No, keep going.
All right, Street Fighter.
You were just, your volume was a little low.
Gotcha. No, I just revealed the title of the movie.
Oh.
Was yours. This is your baby.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I haven't seen that since the theaters. And you're like, I want to do it. And I was like, all right, then. This will be a special kind of episode.
So we'll still continue with the tradition of playing the trailer, even though there's no reveal. But my thought is that the trailer would probably be a pretty big reveal anyway. So
it usually is.
Let's just go ahead and play the trailer. And during the trailer, excuse me, I will go ahead and I will write my traditional Japanese haiku that summarizes my feelings about the film. So here is the trailer for Street Fighter.
After 7 months of fighting, the civil war in Shantaloo may have reached the turning point. The capital has just fallen.
In December 1994, the forces of freedom will face a power-mad dictator in a struggle for the fate of the world.
To kick Bison's ass.
I don't think so.
You'll have to do better than that.
Okay. Yeah! Now, who wants to go home and who wants to go with me?
Okay, so it actually didn't say the name.
It didn't.
But it said the word ass, which for the time was probably pretty scandalous.
I mean, you wrapped up 12 seconds early, so it might say the name in the last 12 seconds of the trailer.
Oh, maybe. Okay. Well, here's the haiku. Great video game. Raul Julia's last movie. Vaya con Dios.
Oh. That's a sad one.
That's why a lot of people hate on this movie, because they're like, oh, he deserved better and blah, blah, blah. He's awesome in this movie.
I mean, I'm glad that you started there, because he is much like I find one person to track in every movie. Like I did Adrian Brody in The Village. Mm-hmm. This movie is his vehicle.
Like he's... I don't know what people's problem with him is exactly. Is that he's too cartoony or too, like, over the top, but, or maybe it's that he's too far removed from, like, the M. Bison character from the video games, which, granted, he is, but he's still awesome. He's still, like, psychotic.
Right.
Which I think is the perfect way to play it.
And he, you know, he's a master actor. He did his work. The trivia on him is he took, you know, aspects of Napoleon and aspects of Stalin and Mussolini, and he's got a clown painting in his room,
yep,
which is based off of the serial killer John Wayne Gacy.
Yep.
You know, like he brought everything to this role. Do you think he knew it was his last? I mean, he was battling stomach cancer at the time.
I was going to say, I've always read stories about how he was sick while he was filming and how it was a bear for him to get to the set and stuff like that. So he must have had, he must have had some idea, probably not hoping that it would be his last, but sort of, you know, wanting to go out on a high note. Mm-hmm. And he brought it. He really did. Like, every time he's on the screen, he gets kind of like wackier and wackier, but in that like menacing sense.
Right. So. I think if our listeners haven't seen Street Fighter, and you don't know who we're talking about, his most famous work is Gomez Adams. Mm-hmm. He plays Gomez. And sadly, those are the only three movies I've seen him in. But now, after seeing Street Fighter, I'm going to look into his repertoire. Kiss of the Spider-Woman I've heard of, so I want to see him in that. And I know he was beloved, and everybody was saying, you know, this shouldn't have been his last movie. No actor that we love, that should have been their last movie. Like, Heath Ledger's last movie shouldn't have been The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus or whatever that was. Mm-hmm. Paul Walker's last movie shouldn't have been a Fast and Furious. I don't think. I would have liked to have seen. I don't even think it was. I think he was doing those like B movies on the side.
I don't remember.
We never want anything to be their last movie, but if you're going to go out on a performance, hand in a performance, this is one. This is a Heath Ledger Joker moment, I feel, for Julie.
Wow. I don't know. I never would have made that comparison, but I mean, I can see.
It's not a Christopher Nolan movie. No. You know, like, I'm not making that comparison, and don't hate me on Twitter for saying that. But it is, you can't fault him. Every decision he makes, he rolls with in mm-hmm. this film. He hasn't phoned in a moment of it. Even a man dying of stomach cancer doing fight choreography, like, he's not, you know, holding back on his punches. He's really going at it.
Right. And on the other side of the coin, the reason why probably most critics and fans alike did not necessarily like this film, we have Jean-Claude Van Damme as Colonel Guile, who is the balls-out American colonel with a French accent, and a big American flag tattoo that looks like it was drawn with finger paint.
I like that tattoo.
I did too. But
if I had biceps, I would totally rock it.
I mean, it's a great tattoo, but it's so bright. It's just so bright. It looks like he let his daughter like put stickers all over him, and that was the last one he peeled off.
Yeah, it does kind of look like one of those tattoos that you soak with water.
So his performance perhaps left a little bit to be desired. In the game, the video game that this movie's based off of, Colonel Guile is basically that. He's like an Air Force colonel who's just a badass, and he's got cool moves. And in the game, he's got this really strange hair that kind of plumes out like a mushroom. And in the movie, he was just like an average Army colonel. Like, there wasn't anything super special about what he did, other than the fact that every now and then, like, a newspaper headline or a reporter would tell you, oh, the courageous Colonel Guile and the valiant Colonel Guile. I mean, he's got, Van Damme himself has natural charisma, but beyond that, he wasn't anything like as over the top as Raul Julia.
No. And the French accent leaves some to be desired, because he does, I mean,
yeah, he's that,
he's got speeches and everything in the movie.
Yeah.
He's got his own Braveheart moment.
Oh yeah. I auditioned for a drama club. I think it might have been in high school with that speech.
Really?
Oh yeah.
The war is canceled.
Yeah.
I can't even do his accent.
The war is canceled, but we can all go home. Yep.
He's got the rasp to it. Had a drug problem during this movie.
Right, because they were. I remember they said they filmed this in Thailand, and he would go out and get hookers and stuff all the time.
And Kylie Minogue.
And yeah.
He had an extramarital affair with Kylie Minogue, who plays
Cammy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing about the movie that gets crapped on a lot is the fact that they tried to shoehorn in a lot of characters, and they did. There are a lot of characters from the video game that just kind of got thrown into the mix for the sake of saying, yeah, we put that guy in the movie. So are you
an expert? Not an expert in the video game, but you know a lot about the video
game.
Mm-hmm. Blanca.
Yeah. Biggest probably departure from the video game that there was.
Because I remember playing them. Well, one, I was a young, impressionable kid. And for some reason, I just went, okay, green people in Brazil. Like, that's what happens in Brazil.
Right.
Does he have a story?
From what I remember about the video game, Blanca started out as a child whose plane crash-landed in Brazil. And he was then raised by animals, he got his electricity by being raised by electric eels, and they taught him how to, like, harness the electricity of his body. I forget why he's green and furry, maybe just because he's, like, feral and something like that. But I remember him being, like one of those raised by wolves kind of characters. He definitely was not Guile's best friend, who was chemically experimented on by Raul Julia, which is who he is in the movie. Now, that said, that's not a terrible arc to play, where Van Damme's best friend gets captured and then experimented on, and then at the end there's a showdown between the two of them.
Right.
But the way they pulled that off was pretty bad.
It was an interesting moment in the movie because Van Damme has his gun on his best friend. Like, his best friend is like, help me, help me.
And
Van
Damme's about to put him out of his misery. He's about to old yell at him.
And I was like, are you kidding me? This is where this movie is going? So I'll admit, I was on the edge of my seat with that moment because I was like, he is not going to shoot his best friend in the head.
No, but that kind of gives you an insight into Van Damme's character, like,
okay.
He didn't even consider it. He didn't even think, like, can we reverse this? Like, are there, maybe we've got some good doctors back on the base.
I mean, he went from hug to gun.
He did. He went from, he didn't even hug him. He just, like, looked into his eyes and he's like, I'll help them. Or I'll help you.
Charlie.
Then I'll make them pay. So he was about to shoot his best friend in the head. And right before that, as he's driving on to Bison's base in his stealth boat, which we can get to later, he's watching a video reminiscing of him and in the movie Blanca's name is Charlie, of him and Charlie just kind of, you know, rabble rousing or whatever they were doing.
Right. And I heard, like, that's part of the game history, is that Charlie is somebody that died.
Charlie is a character in the later games, the Street Fighter, the later games. So he exists, but he's not, definitely has nothing to do with the movie the way he is.
So another question is, because what intrigued me was this movie is based off of Street Fighter 2, the video game.
Right.
Street Fighter 1 exists, probably?
It exists. It's just, it was under the radar, and it wasn't great, it wasn't very good. But some of the characters, like Ken and Ryu, are in it, and I think Sagat is in it, Wes Studi. I don't remember much about that one.
Okay.
But the rest of the characters that we're talking about, so like DJ, for example.
One of my favorite parts of the film.
What was?
DJ.
Oh,
and
why?
The actor that plays him.
Just the comic relief?
Yeah, and I really like that actor, and he does a whole lot of TV.
Juana Man, you mean?
Was he in Juana Man?
He was Juana
Man. His name is Miguel A. Nunez Jr.
I think he was Juana Man. I'm pretty sure.
He's one of those faces where you see, you're like, oh, you know.
That guy.
Yeah, Second Chance Cinema deals a lot with that guy.
That guy.
You know, I'm like, oh, that guy.
Maybe we'll get a follow. Maybe we'll get a follow from him.
Yes.
We would love to. We would love to, but
seek him out.
In the game, he's a, like, gigantically buff Jamaican kickboxer.
Oh, really?
He's
not in the movie.
And in the movie, he's basically Bison's tech support. He sits at a desk and he tells Bison when the computer's gone down and when like they're tracking the satellite and stuff like that. And that, I think, was the biggest departure from the movie. But still, that's no reason to... I don't think that's any reason to get riled up over, you know, a choice like that. Sure, it probably wasn't the best use of him, but they found a spot for him. And actually, this movie takes you up through the characters from the game Super Street Fighter 2. That's where the character is cut off. And there's one character who's missing. His name's Fei Long, and he's basically a Bruce Lee ripoff. He's an Asian movie star who looks like Bruce Lee and fights like Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
Fei Long. Everybody else is in it in some degree. And some of them are just not really... Some of them are just not well-placed. Like T-Hawk, the big Native American, like, Superman in the game, is, like, Guile's second in command, and he's just this tall, lanky guy who happens to wear, like, a Cherokee Indian headband.
They just gave him the name.
And they just called him T-Hawk.
Just shoehorn him in.
Yeah, I don't even think they say his name until, like, late in the movie, and you're like, oh, that's T-Hawk? But then some of the other ones, like Cammy, who was Kylie Minogue, was believable. Chun-Li was a little bit, you know, left to be desired because she played a reporter, which had nothing to do with her story from the game.
I think also Chun-Li, again, playing the game when I was probably, you know, just starting my teenage years. It was on Super Nintendo, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So I was probably around 10 to 12 years old. Chun-Li was hot.
Oh, yeah.
Her outfit went up her thigh mm-hmm. to her hip.
She was scandalous for how old we were.
Yeah, absolutely. And so she was a little bit more reserved in the movie. Looked it up. The actress played Mulan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's Mulan.
The funny thing about the movie is, and I like this part, is that in the game, they're all known for their costumes. Like, Ken is very familiar in his red karate gi. Ryu wears a white one. Chun-Li has the outfit you were just talking about. In the movie, Bison gives them all their outfits. Like, when Bison captures Chun-Li, he makes her put on that dress.
Oh.
And when he...
Which Guile likes at the end.
Right, right. Little, yeah, he's a bit of a tomcat at the end
wear
there.
That dress.
Only if you wear that dress. He gives Ken and Ryu their geese when they're like undercover trying to infiltrate his operation. And I thought that was kind of a cool, not enough to sell the movie to the harshest critic, but it was a cool little twist.
Right. And I think, you know, this is one of those trivia films, you know, where people that have played the game are going to watch it for those little, I don't think DJ's name is said until like very.
He says it, but I don't remember when.
So I think that anybody that's played the game is going to be looking for what they liked about the game, and that's. I hear what you're saying when, if a character is not how you picture them in the game, that's nothing to not like the movie over. But the character that I played when I played Street Fighter 2 was Ken.
Me too.
I didn't like how Ken was in this film.
No, they were hustlers, like
yeah.
trying to deal weapons and stuff like that. Him and Ryu together, which in the game, the story is that they trained together, but then there was like a falling out or something. So they were, I would say they were pretty big victims of what, you know, was. Some character assassination there.
Not to be harassed, but Ken was blonde. Like, that's why I played him in the game, because I'm a blonde guy.
Oh,
Ken was
okay.
Blonde,
okay.
And I don't consider that blonde.
Okay, no.
And I know that's a little hang up to get on, but I, for some reason, as a kid, I was like, that's not a blonde person like me.
No, you're right. I mean, I never would have thought that about you. I never would have, you know, considered you to be so judgmental.
I'm
on
a Harris.
I guess you are.
You're a redhead.
I am.
We're dying breeds.
Yeah. And so you picked, I mean, I suppose you picked a good reason. I can get on board with that. But one of the reasons that this film is so dear to me is because I saw it at a birthday party. It was like the birthday party was like, take us to the movies. And this was in 1994, so I would have been like 13 years old. And I saw it, and when I saw it the first time, I loved it. I don't know if I was just like stupid kid in awe, or if all the great things that I can appreciate about it now struck me or whatever, and so I wanted to see it again. By the next week, it was out of theaters, except for one theater in Parma, which was probably about, at the time, 20 miles away, and my mom drove me out there to see it and sat with me and watched Street Fighter for the second time. And that's one of the only movies I've ever seen twice in the theater, and it was a very special experience because my mom took me to see it. So I definitely have a sentimental place in my heart for this, you know, what other people would call an otherwise crappy movie.
I was wondering, because you said there's a nostalgia story, and we try to save as much as possible for the podcast. So
right.
You never told me, so I was
looking
forward to it.
Oh, that's the story. That's the story. Yeah, we had to, because the only theater it was playing at was for whatever reason, like 20 miles away, and we still went to go see it, and it was just as awesome. And so now, I love it. I have the poster in my house somewhere, and have it on DVD, streaming, digital download, whatever. Just one of those movies that, like, I might not be able to convince you that you should like it, but I will never, ever lay down in the challenge that it's bad.
Yeah. Well, so, that's the point of the show.
That is the point of the
show.
And
I remember as a kid, I have no story to compute with that, but we would quote the trailer before the movie came out. Like, I remember play fighting in the backyard, and then one of my friends would be like, you're going to have to do better than that. And the other friend would go, okay. And then
nice.
You would just get back to fighting it out.
That's awesome. I never did that. That's even better.
No, not better than going to see the movie with your mom in Parma, Ohio.
That's pretty awesome, though. I mean, the trailer obviously left a big impression on you.
I'm a huge trailer guy. I get antsy if I think I'm going to miss the trailers on the way to the movie. And even now that they're 20 minutes long and you probably can miss a couple.
Right.
Like, I want to see all the trailers. I want to experience trailers.
Right.
I want to test your trivia a little bit.
Okay.
Jean-Claude Van Damme
has
a bump in his forehead.
Yeah.
What is that bump?
It's a cyst.
That's a cyst?
Yeah.
It doesn't get removed?
No, it's a cyst that he's talked about in interviews here and there. It's one of two things. I've heard him say it's a cyst, and it just kind of like gets inflamed sometimes, and then other times it doesn't. It's like less noticeable. I also have heard a story that he tried to break a brick with his head, and that was the result.
That's what it looks like to me. It looks like scar tissue.
But it is a noticeable bump on his head that I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't know if I was a Hollywood actor and I had a bump like that on my head, I don't know if I'd bother getting it removed.
No, it's a trademark. It's like Cindy Crawford's mole. Not to date my references, but
I mean, it just seems like there's a lot of risk. Like, what if they messed up your face real good? He's a pretty man.
He is. It's funny because Jean-Claude Van Damme, my best friend growing up before I moved to a different city, he looked like the equivalent of Jean-Claude Van Damme meets Nelly the Rapper, which I know are like...
Was he black?
No, he was white.
So...
And I can't explain it more than that, but he was also my friend that got all the girls. You know, when he was like in fourth grade, everybody liked this other kid named Matt.
I cannot comprehend what you're saying.
And I don't have a... This was before Facebook or anything like that. I have no picture of him. He's not on Facebook. You know, he's just one of those friends in the past. But he looked like Nelly meets Jean-Claude Van Damme. And so when I see Jean-Claude Van Damme, I have like a sense of nostalgia. Like, oh, that was my best friend growing up. And when I see Nelly, the same thing.
I cannot comprehend what a person like that would look like. That's insane to me. That's one of the best person mashups I think I've ever heard described.
And I'm sure like if somebody took one of those apps or whatnot and mashed those two faces together,
he would
look nothing like that.
You could probably do that now.
But yeah, so those are the two people that remind me of little old Matt.
Okay. Do you have more trivia?
Do I have more? My notes are all over the place right now. Was this a commercial success?
No. Yes. I was it?
It made three times its budget.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think the budget was around like $30 million and it made $90 million in the box office.
Wow.
People went out to see it.
Did not know that. That's, yeah, well, see, there you go. People obviously flocked to it for at least two weekends.
This one was probably easy for you. Zangief.
Mm-hmm.
Where have you seen him before?
He was in, the actor?
Yes.
He was
Andrew
in...
Andrew Brian Niarski.
Brian Niarski, yeah. Byron, I don't know. He was in The Program. Uh-huh. I remember him specifically as Latimer in The Program.
Which is a great movie.
Great movie. Might be on the show at one point. He was also in... He played... A Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I don't know which one.
I think in the Jessica Biel one.
Maybe, yeah.
I really like as a horror film.
Is there another one, an obvious one that I'm not thinking of?
No, it was pretty much The Program.
Okay, yeah, then The Program. He played Latimer in The Program, and he was awesome.
I did look it up because I was like, is he in Bloodsport? Like, is he that guy?
No,
those are two different
guys.
But they should play brothers at some
point.
Yeah,
they can.
This one is probably, this is harder. This is a little Jean-Claude Van Damme trivia. He was sued by an extra in a film. What did he willfully do to the extra during filming?
In order to get sued?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I hope it's not anything like sinister. I don't know. Tickled his balls?
Which is not sinister.
No,
he willfully gouged out the eye of an extra during the fight in Cyborg.
Really?
Mm-hmm, and got sued for it.
Well, yeah. I mean, of course you're going to get... That's gross. I'd say that's warranted. I hope the extra won.
I think he did. And there's something going on where, like, now they need more insurance on set because to... spar with Jean-Claude Van Damme can be dangerous.
Yeah, apparently.
That's all my trivia.
Van Damme's one of those actors that, like, I've not seen all his movies because there's a lot of them, but when he was in 1994, he was kind of in 93 through 95, he was in his super prime. He had like Hard Target
which is his IMDb photo.
Yep. I'm looking at it right now. I have that on a t-shirt, that picture. And what else? Street Fighter.
Bloodsport was always my favorite of his.
Bloodsport was like 1988. Time Cop and Sudden Death. All these were just like big budget.
When was Maximum Risk?
That was probably around like 95 or 96.
I had a huge crush on Natasha Henstridge.
Yeah, that was another one. There's another bit of trivia. Van Damme has played twins so far, as I know, in three different movies.
Which ones?
That one, Double Impact, and Replicant.
Huh.
So he's played. So he's well versed in the art of playing twins. He's well versed in twinnery.
I think we're gonna start getting into appreciation shows where we just pick a person that doesn't get enough love in the industry for an episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can make the case somewhere down the line for a Jean-Claude Van Damme appreciation show.
Because
he's right there, run of the mill.
Yep.
He's made Several good movies.
Yeah.
That I would recommend that people probably don't see anymore. They're not on anybody's repertoire.
Right.
Because I would recommend pretty much every movie that you just put down. He's a not a strong actor.
No, he's not. Like, he's not Daniel Day-Lewis.
No, I remember when Time Cop came out, and somebody I would go to see movies like on opening day, and a friend would be like, "How did you like Time Cop?" And I was like, "You know what? It's his first film that has like a really good plot." You know?
Yeah.
Where I think when Street Fighter came out, everybody was expecting kind of like another Bloodsport. Because that's what the video game was. And
Street Fighter was one of the first video game movies to come out. I think Super Mario Brothers came out, then Street Fighter. And they were both lauded as terrible. And then Mortal Kombat came out, and people were like, oh, Mortal Kombat was awesome. And it was. Mortal Kombat got it right. Like, they made a... Like, that was a good adaptation. But it wasn't... There weren't too many video game movies when Street Fighter had come out.
And I think what people need to realize is the writer-director of Street Fighter wasn't going to do a Bloodsport Mortal Kombat movie.
Right.
This guy did The Running Man, Commando, 48 Hours, Die Hard, another 48 Hours, Die Hard 2.
Yep.
He is a writer. Hudson Hawk. He's a writer. And he's going to put story in it. And I think that kind of anybody that was a Street Fighter fan who was just trying to show up for fight scenes,
sadly enough,
didn't like plot. Wasn't looking for a plot. It reminds me of the episode of Jurassic Park 3 with the Indonesian reviewer who said, if you do not ignore the plot, you will enjoy this movie. And I feel like Street Fighter fans who went to see this movie wanted to ignore the plot, which is funny enough for full circle.
I mean, the plot leaves a little bit to be desired for sure, but it was still a plot. I mean, let's see.
We talked about the plot.
the plot is pretty simple. It's M. Bison takes hostages and Guile has to go rescue them. Basically.
And M. Bison wants to start his own city.
Oh, that's the other thing. I'm glad you brought up. In this movie, there are so many props that reflect M. Bison's decor. So, like, all of his troopers have, like, masks that are shaped like the bison symbol. He's got currency with his face on it. He's got chairs and couches and all these things that are just completely like bisonized.
Mm-hmm.
And what always blows my mind, and I'll say this about any movie where there's like a logo on something or whatever, in the movie universe, somebody had to make that for him. Like, he had to call up M. Bison in the movie, had to call up like a uniform store and say, hey, I need these custom helmets that look like this logo. Can you quote me on a bulk price? And
photoshopping and currency.
And somebody had to make that money for him. Somebody had to somebody had to like Photoshop his face onto a dollar bill and then print a million of them. And it always blows my mind when I see these elaborate movie costumes, like stormtroopers, like somebody in space has to make stormtrooper armor.
Which is horrible armor, by the way. It does not.
It
protect
doesn't
against
protect
either.
Anything, and it's. There's a whole repository of these in movie, in character, in plot specialty stores that must exist somewhere to make all of this gear for these bad guys.
This is a fascinating thought process.
Right?
That I want to like inherit with every movie I watch now.
So now the next time you see a movie, like the next time you see
Street Fighter
or like G.I. Joe even, you know, all the Cobra logos and all the Cobra masks and, you know, the fact that it says Cobra on the side of the tank. Someone had to make that decal in the movie.
Like, do you think it's one company making evil, evil stuff?
I don't know. And it's not always evil. I mean, it's not always, I'm trying to think of an example where it's like a good thing, but somebody Like, there's, you know how, like, we have silk screening shops around here that'll silk screen your t-shirts?
Right.
There has to be that type of business in M. Bison's universe.
It's got to be like an M. Bison Etsy shop.
Exactly. Exactly. There has to be an M. Bison Etsy shop somewhere that he ordered all of his troopers' helmets from, their uniforms, their patches, and somebody, and that leads me one step further to, like, what's the duty of the patch maker, say, or the helmet maker, to report this guy to the authorities? Like, hey, so there's this guy, hey, 911, so there's this guy who, he requested about 1,000 patches of a big skull with the world behind it and wings coming out of it. Do we need to be worried about that? Like, is this a Patriot Act kind of thing? And none of that ever happens, nor is it ever explained.
Maybe he just finds easily duped people.
Maybe. I mean,
what's with all this currency? I'm starting my own casino.
Yeah, I mean, it's a gag. The currency didn't bother me so much because you can make counterfeit currency, but the helmets and just the grandiose display of his symbol and his logo everywhere.
And his name
and everything. Like, even his drinking glasses had an M. Bison symbol on them,
right,
which is like, yes, he had to go to Etsy and have that made. And that always crosses my mind when I see big movies like that where they have, props and stuff that are designed specifically after a character.
Mm-hmm. So I love
that. That's a tangent that I'm glad that I got off on, because I've been wanting to share that with somebody for a long time.
And those are like those ideas. Like, I want Saturday Night Live to pick it up and just have that running thing of like, oh, now we're at the M. Bison evil shop.
Right,
the,
now we have to
the
make
Darth Vader stormtrooper assembly line.
Right, exactly. That's what it has to be, an assembly line of these helmets and these...
And designers. The designer story is what I want to say.
Injection molding, which, you know, comes from overseas.
Like, do they have an evil Tim Gunn sitting around?
It's got to be something like that, where they've got... And how excited is Bison on delivery day, like, when all the helmets show up? He's like,
Or angry, guys.
Or angry. Maybe they don't look right.
Right, maybe they're blue. And he's like, blue is what Guile wears.
Yeah. I could probably talk about that for hours, because that's one thing that I feel like I'm the only one who's ever picked up on that.
Thank you for sharing it with me.
So now you're gonna notice it in every big budget movie you see. You're gonna notice that the props and
somebody had to make them, and not a prop. You know, like, get
somebody
outside
in
the,
somebody in the movie universe, in the universe had to make those. So that said, I think we're running a little long here, but I think
it's a really colorful movie. It's really pretty.
You know my love of Street Fighter, and I know that you know you weren't you didn't hate it, but you weren't the biggest fan of it.
I'm glad. I mean, like I said, I was astounded with Julia.
Yeah,
he was amazing in the film, and I feel like everybody needs to go out and see the movie. Mainly for his performance.
Mm-hmm.
He steals every scene that he's in. I think in the current political climate, you can make parallels.
Sure.
Especially with him putting his name on everything.
Sure.
Not to get into politics, but it was astounding to me how similar you can paint things.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, this was your pitch.
Yep.
And I walked away being like, I'm so glad doing this podcast with MC.
Good.
So I can visit movies like this.
So where would we rank this?
I'm going to put that.
No,
you're
going
to go first.
Well, right now we've got our rankings. We're going to keep it to a top five. So right now we've got our rankings.
And if anybody listened to the Village episode, I was in the wrong with the ordering.
So right now we've got Congo, then The Village, then Boiler Room, then Jurassic Park 3, then Saving Silverman. I'm going to forego my nostalgia kick on this movie, and I'm going to put it at number 4. So I'm going to knock down Jurassic Park 3 to number 5 and knock Saving Silverman off the board.
That's sad. This is like the first
sad
hard one, because we're going to lose something.
It is sad. Well, the only thing we can lose is Saving Silverman.
Right.
So.
Or Street Fighter.
Or Street Fighter, true. So we either do or we don't.
And it's going to come down to, yeah, I think we put Street Fighter at number 5 because of Julia's performance.
Okay. So Saving Silverman is gone off the board.
It's gone into the pool of still kick-ass movies.
Not gone from our hearts.
No.
Just gone from the board. All right. So the new board reads Congo, The Village, Boiler Room, Jurassic Park 3, Street Fighter. I can live with that.
And Taylor Nichols likes 3 of those movies
that's
on that list.
That's because he's in them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. A little story is that Harry Renard reached out to the show.
Harry Renard from Boiler Room.
Right.
Character from Boiler Room.
The actor's name is Taylor Nichols. You could find him at Taylor_Nichols7 on Twitter. We urge all followers to go follow him and say Second Chance Cinema sent them as new fans of his.
Right.
Because he was in Congo. He was in Jurassic Park 3 as Laura Dern's husband.
Right.
And he was in Boiler Room as the guy that Antonino Ribisi Fs over.
Right.
And he's a that guy.
He's definitely that guy, and he's awesome because he followed the show. So, which you should do too on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at secondmc. That's at 2ndmc.
Right, and my Twitter handle is at 2ndspro. You can review the show on iTunes and or wherever you listen to your podcast. Give us a 5-star shout out. If you please, that will get us more listeners.
Or tell us we suck.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for.
Welcome hate ats. How do you say it? Hate tweets, I guess.
Hate
on
tweets,
Twitter.
Sure.
I will respond to them all until we blow up and I get too famous and I ignore everything.
Sweet. But with that said, in closing, I think we can both agree, whether it be for nostalgia or
before we go, this was our worst reviewed movie. So this is especially impactful with our slogan.
Okay.
Because this was a 3.8 on IMDb.
Oh, boy. Well, that said, whether it's nostalgia or the love of a specific performance, I think we can agree that Street Fighter, wasn't that bad. I tried to lead into it, and I couldn't remember if our catchphrase was, it wasn't that bad, or just wasn't that bad.
I mean, you can rewrite as we go along.
It wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't.
All right, so we'll be back here with a couple more movies next time, and until then, we will see you later.
All right, peace out.